Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, September 11th at 1:01 p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like maybe someday, saying the date September 11th will not bring sadness. Probably won't happen in our lifetimes. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who never seem to know much about controversial items, things like statements, pictures, or doodles in a birthday book when reporters ask about them. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Kamala Harris separates herself from her former boss a year too late. But first, speaking of doodles, lawmakers have begun the process of drawing congressional districts for Ohio. As you may know, because Ohio Democrats did not sign off on congressional maps 4 years ago, the state's constitution requires lawmakers to draw new ones this year. There are a series of deadlines, and the process is pretty complicated, but the deadline that really matters is November 30th, when lawmakers must pass a new map somehow in time for the 2026 election. The process began this week with Democrats unveiling their proposed map. But first, let's back up a bit. Ohio has 15 congressional districts. 10 of those districts are held by Republicans, 5 held by Democrats. 2, maybe 3 of the current Democratic districts are competitive. All of the Republican districts are fairly safe. President Trump, as you may know, wants Ohio and other states, Texas, to help find him more safe Republican districts so Republicans can maintain their majority in Congress. So, here in Ohio, the speculation is that Republicans will try to pick up at least 2 more seats here through this process. And they have the power because Republicans have supermajorities in both the House and the Senate. Okay, back to the Democrats and their map. They unveiled it this week, and not surprisingly, it looks to make the state more competitive for Democrats. When you look at it, while there are some squiggly lines and a couple of odd peninsulas that stick out from some districts, the districts are largely compact. An analysis of historical voting data over the past 8 years shows that Republicans would be favored in 8 districts, Democrats favored in 7, with a couple of those Democratic-leaning districts still competitive. Here to talk about the map is House Minority Leader Danny Isaacson. The Democrat represents part of Cincinnati, and he helped unveil this map this week. Leader Isaacson, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Great. What was the Democrats' goal when drawing this map?
You know, the principle that sort of should guide everything else in this process is that voters should get to choose their elected officials and not the other way around, right? Which is another way of saying the foxes should not get to guard the hen house. And so that means that we should have competitive, representative, and fair congressional districts. And a lot of that is spelled out in the law. They have to be compact. You have to try and keep communities together. And so our goal here primarily was to draw fair and representative districts and to follow the law.
Mm-hmm. So looking at your map, the map from 10 years ago had the seahorse and had the snake by the lake, and it was really heavily gerrymandered. The current map is not quite as creative, shall we say, but the Democrats' map, it actually kind of makes sense visually when you look at it. You know, Northwest Ohio has a little section. Central Ohio has a couple of districts. Northeast Ohio, the districts are pretty much geographically separated. That was intentional?
Very intentional, because one of the requirements by law is to try and have compact districts. And so the map we introduced is, based on how it gets scored, is the most compact map that has been introduced at any point in the last, five years.
Was compactness the driving factor, or was it trying to find this? Because, historically, elections in Ohio, at least in recent years, has basically been 55%, 45% in favor of Republicans. the current map is the majority is more than that. Was your goal try to get to that 55-45% in the congressional makeup, or was it compactness?
Our representatives in D.C. are our voice in federal government. Mm. And so we want voters to be able to have their voices represented in a way that is accurate to the makeup of the state on hugely important issues. Because at the end of the day, the reality is that bill that was passed earlier this year, the big, you know, you can call it what you want, I call it the big ugly bill, that gutted Medicaid, that's leading hospitals to close, that is driving health insurance costs to go way up, that it cut school lunches and breakfasts, that bill passed by 4 votes. That's a 2-point swing. If we had fair maps in Ohio that accurately represented the makeup of the state, which is, as you noted, about 55-45, that alone would have made it so that that bill could not pass. So when we talk about what is our goal and why does this matter, it matters because that is how you can pass incredibly unpopular bills, by gerrymandering districts and by rigging elections so that they don't accurately reflect the diversity of voices in the state. And so that is what our map would do, is give Ohio congressional districts that accurately reflect where the people of Ohio are, which is that they lean a little one way in an average year. And look, there's enough competitive districts here where voters could really have a voice. If they were really angry with one party, that party could lose a lot of seats under this map in a wave election, which is appropriate, right? We want competitive districts. We want districts and who wins to represent the will of the voters and to be able to have the accountability of elected officials. So those were all things that we thought about.
To accomplish that, don't you have to do a little bit of gerrymandering yourself? Don't you have to sort of look at some of these cities and carve out a section to match the rural vote, to make that district a little more competitive than it would be if you just excluded the city?
The key thing here is, are you ending up with a set of maps that fairly and accurately represents the people of the state? And you look at the averages because you want them to, you know, if everything was held equal and you had the baseline average, what would be the outcome? Now, it doesn't account for, again, you know, wave election years like, you know, what we've seen plenty, you know, in whether it's 2006, 2014. And in those wave election years, you want enough competitive districts that the will of the voters can actually be reflected in the congressional makeup. Because what happens in states all over the country that have huge amounts of gerrymandering is that you can have a wave election, but you don't see much change in the makeup of the congressional delegation. And so you end up not having an accountable Congress.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that when you force people to only compete in primaries because they don't have competitive general elections, they're not competing for the votes and the approval of where the majority of voters are.
Let's talk about the process here, because it's going to be an arduous process and it's going to be some back and forth. Republicans in the legislature, they really don't even have to consider this map if they didn't want to. They can just draw their own districts, blow through deadlines in the process, and just approve a more Republican map if they want. So why did you present this map now when they don't even have to look at it? And they may not look at it.
There's a lot there, I think. Let's start with why we put forward a map. Because it's our responsibility to do it. You know, people ask me a lot, you know, you're the minority leader, you're not in the majority in the House, you know, how do you think about, you know, why push certain issues when you know, you don't have the votes? And on issues like this, where it really is about the fundamentals of our democracy, the answer is that there's 12 million people who live in this state, and that's 12 million too many to not, at the very least, fight for their basic democratic rights and for us to follow the law. But another issue that you bring up, which is like, you know, they don't have to do anything, right? That's what you said.
Mm-hmm. They don't.
Let's unpack that a little. They do, by the law. It's very clear that they do. The issue is that they don't have to because the Supreme Court has let them off the hook. And so it's a pretty scary environment where even you and most many people say, oh, well, now they don't have to. No, they do have to. There's no one to enforce the law, but the law is still there. And we cannot give up on the law. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the Democratic caucus is not giving up on the law. The law is spelled out. There are requirements in it. There's a required process. You can't blow through deadlines. Those deadlines are set in law. Those deadlines are not suggestions. You can't ignore Supreme Court like they did 7 times a few years ago. That is flouting the law and it's violating the Constitution. And when we lose, when we accept publicly that it's okay to just violate the law with no consequences, a lot of other things start to break down. And so I want to be very clear here that we got to be a little careful on what they are or are not allowed to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know what you've laid it out very well, but the Supreme Court, even with all those decisions, they largely passed the map they wanted to pass a couple of years ago. So that leads to the next question is, what kind of discussions have you had with Republican leaders? Are you planning discussions to try to reach some kind of compromise?
So I've only had, I'm pretty new to this role. I've only had a few mostly scheduling and logistics conversations with the majority. We have not had substantive negotiations about what the maps could look like.
Do you anticipate you'll have those? And are you optimistic? You may not get 7 Democratic districts, but you might be able to keep the 5, maybe get 6 districts in the end?
I wish that I was in the position to get to determine the schedule and the nature of the negotiations and what we were doing, but that is in the hands of the majority. And so I don't have enough information to hypothesize or guess what they're going to do or how they're going to do it.
All right. Again, looking at the process here, this is a very, even though it's supposed to be apolitical, in theory, you draw districts that are compact, that represent the people, but we all know it doesn't always work that way. Have you had conversations with current Congress people? I'm thinking about Marcy Kaptur in Toledo, Amelia Sykes in Akron. They both face tough re-election fights with their current districts, and they have a really vested interest in what the new map looks like. How much of a role did they play, if any, in your map making?
They don't have a role in the map making process. We, alerted them as to what we were planning to introduce, but they didn't have a role in the actual sort of map making or drawing of the congressional districts, nor is that, sort of the plan moving forward.
So their districts, how would you characterize their districts under your map? Are they competitive? Do they favor the Democratic Party in those areas?
They are very competitive districts. So again, they're districts that, if there was a wave election year and if Democrats were in power and people were upset with Democrats, they could swing the other way and vice versa. Now it just so happens that those two members of Congress in particular have been tremendously effective public servants for a very long time. And so, they're pretty popular with the people they've been delivering for so long. But, you can imagine someday in the future, when those are open seats, those would be very competitive districts.
Let's look at how this has become. This has always kind of been a national effort, especially since, say, 2010, on the 2010 census and the redistricting fights in 2011. It became more of a national strategy to try to take control of Congress through map making. But now it's really gotten... It's out in the open. It's a truly national fight. President Trump has actually just advocated gerrymandering to try to win some extra seats in Texas and other states. And Bernie Marino this week weighed in on some of the redistricting fight. Here's what he had to say about Republican states openly gerrymandering to give the GOP more seats in Congress.
The Democrats have gerrymandered their states to the point of oblivion. If you look at the entirety of New England, there's not a single Republican district in all of New England, in all of Delaware, all of New Mexico, all of Hawaii. That's insane.
He has a point. There are plenty of Republicans in those states, in those areas, and they're not represented. So is it fair that because of because Maine, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Hawaii, New Mexico gerrymander, that Ohio should gerrymander the other way? What's your thought on how this has become a national map-making effort?
Well, you're right that this has become nationalized, but we already have gerrymandered maps. We do not have representative congressional districts. If we did, that big, ugly bill wouldn't have passed, and millions of people's health insurance wouldn't be at risk. So we already have a tremendous amount of gerrymandering. These districts are already rigged in Ohio. And I think you're right that it has become a national effort because President Trump is very openly worried about losing Congress next November because of how unpopular that bill is, because of how unstable the economy is with the tariffs. And so he is openly calling state legislatures to sort of be pawns in that fight. And one of the things that, you know, we've been saying in partnership with our friends in Missouri and Indiana and elsewhere is, you know, we might be Midwest nice here in this part of the country until you mess with our maps. Because at the end of the day, these are not Republican maps or Democratic maps. These are the people's voices in Congress. And so we're going to fight like hell to try and maintain, or in Ohio's case, get to fair congressional representation, because when we don't have it, we get extreme policies that are out of touch with the will of the people, which is exactly what we've been seeing. It's not a hypothetical. We are living through it.
Yeah. One last question, then we'll let you go. And we'll probably have you on as this thing progresses over the next few months. But, you know, last year, voters rejected a plan to make this process less partisan. It lost. The redistricting reform effort lost. How is that vote playing out this year? Is there a hangover for Democrats in good government groups? Are Republicans more emboldened? Are Democrats more defiant because of last year's election and the redistricting reform result?
You know, I am an optimist by nature. I couldn't do this job if I wasn't. And I am a believer in the ability for people to come together and form a government that is of use and of service to people all over the state. And I still believe we can get there. And I believe in our democratic principles. But what we saw last year from the Republicans who made that ballot language was some of the most cynical political moves I think anyone in Ohio has seen for a very long time. But it does not diminish the overall commitment to the fact that we need a better process for drawing these maps. We need a process for guaranteeing some independence and fairness. And so those continue to be the goals. I still think those are extremely popular when people get a fair chance to vote on those issues. And I do think there's going to be a really strong backlash all over the country, including here in Ohio, if Republicans try and steal more congressional districts from the people. I think there will be a strong counter movement because people do not like it when politicians try and take their voices and their power away. We saw that with the August election a couple of years ago, and I think we will see it next November if Republicans follow Donald Trump's orders and try and steal congressional districts from the people.
My thanks to House Minority Leader Danny Isaacson for joining us here on Snelligoster. Leader Isaacson, thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm eager to see how this all plays out. We're always hoping here for a bipartisan solution on these maps, but we're always disappointed. But we wish you all the best.
You and me both are aware. Look, that is the best possible outcome for the people of Ohio, to have fair maps that a bipartisan group of people vote for. And that would be great. But the key point there is they have to be fair maps.
Great. Thank you very much, Minority Leader Danny Isaacson. We'll be right back.
It's rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snelligoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past half fortnight. Well, this week we honor a shrewd publishing strategy, which may not be a shrewd political move. This week we honor former Vice President Kamala Harris. She soon will come out with her new book, 107 Days, detailing her time as VP in her short time as a presidential candidate. And according to an early reading by The Atlantic, Harris goes after former President Joe Biden, saying Biden was reckless by not dropping out of the race earlier. She says she did not speak up during what she called months of growing panic about Biden's cognitive health out of loyalty to the then president. No doubt, as she starts her book tour, there will be lots of juicy tidbits to come. But for now, for Spilling the Beans, Kamala Harris gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. But the book likely severely hurts any chances she had of winning a Democratic nomination for president. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. Please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Also, the best way to help us is just tell your friends about us. Word of mouth is the key. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.